Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and my guest this week is a very familiar face and voice, I hope. It's Stuart Smith. Stuart, how are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing well. That sounded very, very like nurse-like there and doctor-like. But yeah, I'm doing all right. Thank you, John. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. Yeah, thanks for coming back on. I think the listeners have been worried about you. Stu, worried that we'd had some kind of falling out at the JTET sort of royal family style disagreement, but it's not the case. It's just you're very busy with real world events, aren't you? And the world of work, as it's called. So thanks for making some time to come on the pod. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, no worries. I'm excited to talk about it.
Excellent. Well, considering that time is money, as they say, Stu, we should probably get straight into it and talk about J2 Round 2, which is in the history books now after being played over the weekend. We're going to talk about the Saturday games, first of all, because the fixtures were split fairly evenly across Saturday and Sunday, weren't they? So five games on Saturday. Let's start by talking about Albirex Niigata. They made it two wins out of two by beating Nagasaki 1-0 at home. They had to do it the hard way, though, didn't they, with 10 men after a red card for Shion Honma. Honma had actually had a couple of shots saved by the Nagasaki goalkeeper Kenta Tokushige in the first half, but the all-important goal in this one came in the 52nd minute when Yoshiaki Takagi's free kick was deflected past Tokushige by the Nagasaki captain Hiroki Akino. Niigata were nearly 2-0 up just shortly after that, with Soya Fujiwara heading against the post following a corner. And then, yeah, all the action was kind of bunched together in this game, Stu. Honma's red card came in the 57th minute. It was a second yellow after a high but not particularly malicious challenge, in my view. To be honest, I was a little bit surprised to see the yellow card and the subsequent red come out. I thought that was a bit harsh. But, yeah, even with 10 men for 33 minutes or so, Niigata were able to hold on and get a second straight win. And that puts them, for what it's worth, top of the J2 table, albeit with the small matter of 40 games left to play. So what did you make of this game, Stu? Niigata getting a 1-0 win at home to Nagasaki?
Well, it's Niigata's first, it's the first time in, I think it's 12 years or so, where they've won their first two games of the season. I think the last time they did it there in J1. I think that it looked pretty even from the highlights that I saw. The goal was, it was pretty lucky. It's one of those ones where you can't really fault the defender for trying to stick his leg there, but there is no reason to do it either. It's one of those kind of ones where you can see both sides of it. How Fujiwara missed that header from like a yard out, I have no idea. Nagasaki did have chances of their own. I know Luan had a shot that was saved, and Ken Tokura headed just wide. I think these two teams, just to be very, very bland about it, they'll be there or thereabouts come the business end of the season. I think they're both good sides, and I think that possibly the next time these two teams meet, it'll have a very kind of different makeup, and I think it'll be a lot more important. Obviously, Nagasaki is still without Edgar Jr. They had Kemen Togashi on the bench as well. I think they need to find possibly a better way to incorporate all of their attacking talent. I know Sean Carroll said on the pod last week that he wonders why teams don't go for it a bit more in J2, and I wholeheartedly agree with him on that. And I'd like to see Nagasaki just kind of go like go for broke. Just, they've got a lot of good attacking players, shoehorn them into that side and see where that takes you. And I think that the next time these two teams meet, I think there'll be definitely promotion kind of ramifications on the line. Shion Honma, he's been red carded like this before. He was red carded last year. I can't remember who it was against, but it was a very, in fact, almost eerily similar. He got a bit carried away. And I think that's what he does. I think like he's that kind of player where ball at his feet, he's got that spark, but that enthusiasm is sometimes a double-edged sword. So going forward, it's great to watch, but you just want him to rein it in a little bit more when he's kind of defending, because there was no reason to put the boot in so high. I thought it was a yellow card. I don't think you can raise your foot that high without kind of warranting a yellow card like that. But there's no reason to do it. It's in the nothing area of the pitch. He's just too enthusiastic. He just got a little bit carried away. I think it's going to be a little bit of a difficult balancing act trying to rein him in a little bit. But I think both these teams are pretty good. And yeah, I expect to see both of them kind of up around the top of the table the next time they meet.
Yeah, fair enough. It's going to be interesting to see how their respective seasons pan out from this point. But yeah, but for my money, this felt like a kind of, you know, considering it's only round two, this was about as heavyweight a clash as you could probably get, isn't it, early on in the season. So it was interesting. And yeah, I think Nagasaki still got a little bit of work to do in terms of their attacking potential. And I think Edgar Junior, you know, coming back is going to have a big part to play in that, isn't it? So okay, Stu, yeah, so far so good. We'll move on and talk about Omiya Ardija for the next couple of minutes. Their home opener for the season ended in disappointment, didn't it, as they conceded two goals from corners at home to Kofu and ended up losing 2-0. Still no sign of Iba up front for Omiya. He wasn't in the matchday squad for the second consecutive round, but I did spot a Norway flag draped behind one of the goals, so hopefully he's not too far away. The Kofu skipper, Ryohei Arai, scored with a free header in the first half to make it 1-0, and again, too many Omiya defenders on the wrong side of their men in the penalty area in the second half. This time it was Hideyuki Nozawa who was able to stab home from close range following a flick on. So yeah, any thoughts on Omiya and Kofu after this one, Stu, and who do you think is going to finish higher this season?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that Kofu are a better side than Omiya. They've got consistency of players. They've got consistency of manager. They're a team that knows what to do. They're not a particularly flash side. They've got, obviously, they're without Dudu these days, and they play, what's his name, Koki Arita up front. Mitsuhira is a very good addition for them. Really like him as a player and as a mood maker in that side. They and I think they took advantage of some a work in progress, shall we say, of this Omiya side, particularly the defense. They don't look particularly solid at the back. Like you said, two goals from corners. One was an unmarked header. The other one was Hideyuki Nozawa just getting on the end of a ball back into the box. I think right now it's difficult to think about Omiya as being better than Kofu. Maybe as the team kind of takes shape and they get Iba back in. Nerman Haskic played but didn't really do a lot, to be quite honest. They seem to have jettisoned Philip Klaich because he was on the bench. This goalkeeper Tomoki Ueda, I've never heard of him. I know he played against Mito, but is he a rookie? Is he a new player?
I think he is. Yeah, I've never seen him before. His profile picture looks like a very young, fresh-faced character. Certainly,
if he is a rookie or even like inexperienced, which he obviously is, there's going to be some teething troubles, and they are more likely than not going to come at set pieces. And Kofu, yeah, they took advantage of that, and they probably worked on that and focused on that. And good for them, I think. Ito Akira is. Yeah, he's lost a couple of players, but his team doesn't seem to have missed a beat, really.
Yeah, Kofu could also be on two wins out of two, couldn't they? He was just missing having that late penalty saved against Jeff in round one. And we should mention, you know, they've had two away games to open up the season. So I think four points from the first two games, both away from home. We'll think, Akirito will be pretty pleased, pretty happy with that. And Omiya still with some work to do on the training pitch, as we seem to say perennially.
Yeah, sorry to jump in, but it's not as if they don't have talent. I mean, they started with Kurokawa, Okunuki, who I really like saying, Nakano, but it's just kind of fitting them all in. I think I saw in the highlights that they set up in a 4-4-2, which is really weird to see because I'm so used to them being in a 3-5-2 with Takuya Takagi. But obviously this is Ken Iwase's job and he's setting up a 4-4-2. it looks like there will be some settling in or bedding in problems. They do have the individual talent, but whether they can kind of put them into the positions that they need to succeed, that's what Iwase gets paid to do. So he better figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, we wait with interest and with bated breath as usual where Omi are concerned. Stu, yeah, thanks for that. Now, there was a superb performance and result from Machida Zelvia, wasn't there, over the weekend, winning 3-1 away at Iwata. The Iwata goalkeeper, Naoki Hata, gifted Machida an early lead in this game when he scuffed a clearance straight to Yuki Nakashima, who made no mistake and gave Machida the lead. Should mention, before we go any further, Stu, there was almost a kit clash in this game with Iwata playing in sky blue and Machida in an all-white kit. I had to strain my eyes and even lean forward on the sofa to see the action clearly, which is not what you want to be asking me to do, on a weekend. But Iwata did level things up on the half hour with Masaya Matsumoto converting Lukian's low cross from close range. But Iwata were level for less than 2 minutes. This time Nakashima turned provider, crossing for Taiki Hirato to score with a very uncharacteristic looping header at the near post. Wow, I didn't know that was something that he had in his locker. I know he's a fantastic player with his feet, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure he was even tall enough to win headers. But he did brilliantly to score that one. In the second half, Machida completely outplayed Iwata, didn't they? To be honest, and they sealed the points with a fantastic flowing team goal, one touch passing that was finished off by the substitute Ariyajasura Hasegawa. And when he scores, you know it's probably going to be your day, don't you? It should have even been 4-1, but Hirato had a goal-bound shot cleared off the line right at the death. Yeah, fantastic performance and result from Machida, Stu. Do you think that Iwata boss Masakazu Suzuki might be under some early pressure now? They lost Ryukyu in round one, and then they didn't look good at all in this game. Although we should say, yeah, Machida were excellent, but Iwata looked pretty wretched.
They did look pretty wretched, and I'm not really surprised. Masakazu Suzuki shouldn't really be in a job. It was, this might sound a bit strong, but it was a coward's call by Jubilo to keep him in the job. It was the path of least resistance, and they're getting exactly what they deserve from it, to be quite honest. I'm not really sure I have anything positive to say about Jubilo, but Machida, I think, to segue onto something a little bit more positive, they look like they could be the real deal this year. Very, very impressed with them on this viewing. And bear in mind, this is without Chon Tae-se and Dudu. I don't even know where Dudu is. I don't even know if he's in the country or if he's doing quarantine or whatnot. Chon Tae-se is just coming back from injury. And you add those two to Taiki Hirato and obviously the evergreen Yuki Nakashima, who's not going to get you 15 goals a season, but he's good enough to lead the line and occupy defenders. I think that Machida look really, really good. They've got they've got Sano and Leo Takai at the base of their midfield, I think, and just having those two there with Taiki Hirato in front of them, that's going to be a really difficult proposition for other teams. And I think if they can keep, and I know Popovic doesn't really like to change the team so much, but I think keeping the forward line fresh and hungry will be key for them this year, because I think they have the tools to possibly be definitely up around the top six. I know there's no playoffs this year or whatever, but I expect them to be much better than last year. And that last goal, the third goal, was just such a supreme kind of smooth counter-attack. It was just brilliant. It was fantastic to watch. It didn't belong in J2. It belonged in J1. I like Machida. I think they look pretty good this year, and I don't want to get too carried away with them. But they had a decent... I know they drew against Yamagata, but Yamagata are a good side as well, and this is kind of a big statement from them, and it's a positive one from them. I think that the key is keeping Hirato fit, because if he's fit and if he's anywhere near the form that he had 2 years ago, Machida are going to be a very dangerous proposition, especially when they get Dudu and Chante Sey to full fitness.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. We had a question on this game from Mike Innes, our good friend at Gogo Omi Ardija. It's pretty succinct. He asks, are Iwata bad or are Machida great or both? I think very quickly I'll say yes, I think Iwata are bad this season based on what I've seen. For Machida being great, I think we do have to wait and see. They were certainly great in the second half, weren't they? And that goal, as you mentioned, the breakaway, the counter-attack for a third was, very out of place in J2. I can't remember Machida scoring a goal like that in the whole of last season. So, interesting times. Iwata bad? Yes, I think so. And Machida great? Mike, I know it's a sort of cowardly answer, but I think we'll have to wait and see. Moving things on. Stu, speaking of away wins, Mito came from behind to win 2-1 at Kitakyushu, didn't they, in a pretty entertaining game. Mito had three great chances to score in the first half, including Yuichi Hirano hitting the crossbar with a very nice chipped effort early on, but it was 0-0 at the break. Kitakyushu actually took the lead just after the hour in this one, with Ryo Sato holding off our good friend Jefferson Tabinas and slotting home a fine finish.
It's a bit generous, holding off. Tabinas was probably about 3 yards in front of where he needed to be, really.
Well, he was in the same postcode. He was in the same postcode. Yes. But Mito, Stu, they turned things around with 2 goals in 3 minutes. Firstly, an own goal from the Kitakyushu defender Takuya Nagata, heading a corner kick past his own goalkeeper. I believe that's own goals in consecutive home games now for Kitakyushu, isn't it? They scored an own goal on match day one as well. And shortly after that, Ryo Nisato swept in the winner. So what did you make of this game, Stu? Kitakyushu 1, Mito 2.
I feel bad for Kitakyushu. Like, they're such a good couple of years. Obviously, they won J3 and they had like a fantastic year last year in J2. But then to be a Kitakyushu fan, you see all your top players go. I mean, I looked at the starting lineup of that Kitakyushu side and I barely recognize anyone from last year. I know Takahashi Daigo and Nagata Takuya. Noguchi, maybe I remember him, but the rest of them, they're all gone. Like, the team that did so well last year, they've been decimated. And I think the opening your season with 2 home defeats is not the ideal way to dispel doubts that everything's going to be okay. I think they've got a real difficult uphill task to survive this year, and I think that's such a shame. And just the victims of their own success, really. They played so well last year that all their best players got taken because they couldn't afford to keep them, which is a real shame. I think this game, I think, like, Mito are not going to be as good as last year. The talent level is not as good, but they'll find ways to eke out wins, and I think they'll score plenty of goals. I think they'll concede a lot of goals as well. I mean, defensively, they're no better than they were last year. They've swapped Boniface for Tabinas, and that's not going to float anyone's boat, really. I think it was a good win for Mito, and one that kind of they needed after their performance last week. But I think alarm bells should really be ringing for Kitakyushu, because you can't, when you look at what's being taken away from them, it's very, very difficult to see them getting anywhere close to what they were doing last year. I mean, I'd be amazed if they finished mid-table, to be quite honest. Like, you've got to trust Shinji Kobayashi, but you can only work with what you're given, right? And so I would say that they're in for a bit of a battle to stay up this year, which is a shame because they were so good the previous 2 years.
Unfortunately, yeah, based on what I've seen of Kitakyushu so far this season, Stu, I'm inclined to agree. We had another quick question from Mike Innes again at Gogo Omiya RDG, who's doubling up. And he's asking a very specific one this time. Can we find a better example of a beautiful assist but a terrible finish than the chance in the 62nd minute of this game. So anyone who's got access to the full match, if you just scrub to the 62nd minute, 20 seconds, Nisato with a brilliant back heel sets up our good barrel-chested friend Toyamane. But his shot did not match the build up. He sent it wide of the post. Yeah, I've wasted chances like that many times, so it was very familiar to me.
But it's one of those. It wasn't a quick back heel. It was like an elongated back heel. Like he redirected it as opposed to just kind of help the ball on its way.
Well, yeah. What was impressive about the back heel was it was done with a lot of power, but also finesse. And you kind of can't. It's very difficult to do both, isn't it?
Who was it who missed the chance?
It was a Yamane.
Yeah, that was. I was going to say a bad word then, but it wasn't a very good finish.
I was going to say as well. You can tell that I used to be a defender and I used to play at left back when I in my inverted commas playing career, because what I noticed most when I scrubbed through to this passage of play was that Keita Kyushu actually lost possession twice out on their left in the build up,
and
I think that is a sign of a team that's going to struggle. If you've got possession in your own left back position and you give possession away and then you get it back and then you immediately give it away again, you are going to have a hard time.
CC Tokyo Verde.
I think we'll get onto that, won't we, in a moment. But yes, Mike, we can't find a better example of a sort of disappointing end to a fine approach play, except maybe this podcast. So we better keep it moving, Stu, before we run out of time. Yeah. Now the only other team with a 100% record after two rounds, level with Niigata at the top of the sort of very nascent table, is FC Ryukyu. Stu, they won 2-1 at home against Yamaguchi over the weekend. Ryukyu scoring inside the first minute for the second game in a row after catching Iwata cold in round one. This time it was Takuma Abe volleying in across from Koya Kazama at the back post inside the first minute to give Ryukyu the lead. It was 2-0 before the half hour. Abe's shot was parried by the Yamaguchi goalkeeper Kentaro Seki, but Keita Tanaka was on hand to snaffle up the rebound. Second half was a lot more even, and the rain intensified. I think Ryukyu might be the new Gifu, Stu, because every home game in Gifu was rainy last year, wasn't it? I think Ryukyu have had two home games, two rainy days so far. Yuki Kusano pulled a goal back for Yamaguchi just before the hour with a smart finish, but it was actually Ryukyu who looked more likely to extend their lead, wasn't it? And Abe hit the outside of the post with a curler from just outside the box late on. So Ryukyu winning two games in a row, 2-1 against Yamaguchi this time. What did you think, Stu?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised Ryukyu are doing. Have opened the season with two wins. They've got such a good attacking lineup for this level. Abe is going to score goals if you give him the service. He could have had a hat trick in this game because he missed a gilt edge chance as well as hitting the post and scoring. The first goal, it was such a brilliant cross from Kazami. It took everyone except Abe out of the equation. What a fantastic ball that was. Yeah, Ryukyu are good. You sleep on Ryukyu at your peril, because they, like I said, in the final third, they're going to give teams plenty of problems. As long as they can cut out the nonsense at the back, which, I mean, it's easier said than done for Ryukyu because they've got couple of jokers at centre back, but I think they're embracing the feeling of just going for it, because they got just such a good attacking selections that are possible for them, and I think they'll surprise a few people this year. They won't be too dissimilar from last year, where they kind of humped teams like 6 or 7-0 and then get turned over at home by Keita Kyushu or whatever. But I think the good days will outnumber the bad days this year. I could be wildly wrong about that, but I think that Ryukyu just have, they have a continuity in their side. There aren't that many changes from last year. Obviously they lost Koizumi, but they brought in Kiyotake Koki to stick on the left-hand side. You got Kazama on the right, Abe up front. They're attacking kind of lineup is just good, and they'll cause any team's problems. Like the Ikeda is a really good player that I like as well. They're just good. And they've got depth as well. You look at their bench and on the weekend, they've got Akamine on the bench, Shintaro Shimizu on the bench, Uehara Shinya, who only came on at the end. They've got options there. Like defensively, they're still, I don't know what's going to happen there. They're going to have these games where they just look like complete amateurs. But if you balance that out with the attacking kind of mindset and attacking talent they've got, I think they should be all right.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis. To be honest, speaking as someone who predicted that Ryukyu might be in trouble this year at the bottom, and I also predicted Yamaguchi to do better than last season. I watched the first half unfolding in horror, really, because Ryukyu was so much better than Yamaguchi. It wasn't really funny. The second half was a bit more even, obviously, as Ryukyu eased off a little bit. But they seem to be coming into the season in good form, don't they? And they're doing well. I think I wouldn't count Yamaguchi out just yet. I think they were so poor in the first half, really, that they kind of threw this game, mostly threw it away in the first period. So I still think they might do better than last season. I'm not changing my mind on them just yet. Okay, Stu, let's take a quick break for some music, and then we'll rejoin and we'll talk about the Sunday action as well. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Stu, I think we're both refreshed. Let's talk about the action from J2 on Sunday. Six games on Sunday and only six goals. I've been working on my maths in your absence, Stu. I believe that averages one goal per game. Let's talk about the action, including a pair of goalless draws. One of these 0-0 draws was at Sanga Stadium in the game between Kyoto and Matsumoto. Actually a good game based on what I saw on the highlights, with lots of chances. Matsumoto hit the post early on through Kazuhiro Sato, and the Kyoto goalkeeper Tomiya Wakahara made a great save from Toyofumi Sakano as well. At the other end, Matsumoto's goalkeeper Kentaro Kakui had to make a perfect tackle on Peter Utaka. He'd been sent clear after Takato Nonomura underhit a back pass. Nonomura was a first half substitute. This is after Yuya Hashiuchi, the defender, Matsumoto defender, had to go off injured early on. So it's two clean sheets in a row for Kyoto and Matsumoto. But I noticed Matsumoto haven't managed to score yet in round one or round two. They might be regretting letting Serginho leave in the winter transfer window. But I think there's more to come from both of these teams, I suspect. Akita picked up their first win at J2 level, Stu, winning 1-0 away at Tochigi. The vital goal in this game came in the 11th minute from a smart free kick routine at the Kanseki Stadium. Junya Suzuki rolling the ball across the penalty area for an unmarked Masaki Okino to fire into the net. Things nearly got even better for Akita at the end of the first half, but Ryota Nakamura hit the crossbar after the Tochigi goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata had fumbled the ball. Akita reasonably comfortable in the second half and were able to see out the win fairly comfortably, I think, Stu. We should mention Tochigi had some complaints about their white shorts, didn't they, in their opening home game. So they've officially changed and that they were wearing blue home shorts for this game. I think that's going to be the pattern moving forward. So, hail the blue shorts. It was much easier to see what was going on this week. Stu, how important is this win for Akita, 1-0 away at Tochigi, and should we be worried about them? We got a question from Nagasaki Blue and Orange on Twitter. Have Tochigi played as poorly as their results suggest? No points so far, no goals scored against Okayama and Akita. He notes that they beat Okayama twice in 2020. So, how important is that win for Akita, and should we be worried about Tochigi?
I think we should be worried about Tochigi. I think you take Takahiro Akimoto, who's now at Urawa, and Masaya Tashiro, who's now at Sagantosu, who are easily the two best players last year. Take them out of the side, they look completely different. And this is not the year to be losing your best players, given that there are four relegation spots. I think they'll get better, but I think they'll be in trouble. I think that like Kazuaki Tasaka needs to figure something out. pretty sharpish about his attacking setup, because yeah, Kisho Yano's not gonna cut it, really, if that's the guy you're staking your season upon. Then it's not going to work, unfortunately. Akita, yeah, it's a really good win and an important win, given that they're still without Kaito Chida at the back. I noticed on the bench was now Eguchi, who didn't come on, so I assume he's just coming back from injury, I would say, because he needs to be in that side. But I like that. The goal was really well worked. It was like a special, wasn't special, what do you call it? Like a designed set piece where it just rolled it across the area. And Okino, who's a really good player, had a really good debut season last year, just slotted it into the net. It's an important win, given that they lost last week, and it should give them confidence going forward. If I were Tochigi, I'd be a little bit concerned about how this season has started, and I'd be concerned about where the goals are coming from, to be perfectly frank. Like I said, like, Yano's not going to cut it. Don't really know much about this Toshiki Mori, or who's Keita Ueda? I don't even know who that is, to be quite frank. So I think what they're looking at is they're looking for another Akimoto, but they don't grow in trees, you know? And they're rolling the dice this year, and it's not the year to be rolling dice.
No, very true. Yeah. Very true. Yeah. I think, yeah, for me, it's the fact that in these games, Tochi, you just haven't made many chances, have they? And even in this game, Akita went in front in about the 10th minute and just weren't under any kind of sustained pressure. Really, for the rest of the game, I think that would concern me. I think losing 1-0 at home to Akita is not the end of the world necessarily, but performance-wise, not really being able to put them under the cosh or create too many chances, I think, is something that should be concerning, I think. But yeah, we should say well done to Akita. I know they're starting the season with this run of 5 consecutive away games, aren't they? Which is not ideal. So I think to have a win in just their second, you know, second time of asking will be very pleasing for everybody involved there. Okay, some other games from Sunday. Stu, Kanazawa picked up their first win of the season, didn't they? Winning 1-0 away at Okayama. Kanazawa goalkeeper Masaaki Goto made a great save to keep out Ryosuke Kawano early on in this game. And then a favourite player of mine, Shion Niwa, put Kanazawa ahead about 5 minutes before halftime with a very nice curling shot. His first goal for Kanazawa since joining from Ehime. Kanazawa goalkeeper Goto made another smart save in second half stoppage time to make sure that his side held on to the 3 points. Not many positives for Okayama to take out of this game, I don't think, but some good news elsewhere. The forward Lee Yong-jae seems to be coming back soon. He played in a reserve game, the so-called Elite League, which is a kind of newly formed reserve league for this season. I think he was involved in an Okayama game kind of the first half of this week, so maybe he's coming back to full fitness soon. The other game that finished 0-0 was between Sagamihara and Gunma, but again, it was an entertaining match. The talismanic Romulo was back in the starting lineup for Sagamihara. Should have scored a header in the first half, but he couldn't grab a first ever J2 goal for his side. Gunma had the better chances in the second period. Genki Omai rattling the crossbar with a free kick, and the late substitute Kohei Shin saw his shot deflected onto the frame of the goal as well. So I think Sagamihara probably happy with a point from that one overall. We talked about Montedio Yamagata a little bit earlier, didn't we, Stu? They drew 1-1 at Machida in round 1, but they picked up their first win of the campaign. This time, a comfortable 2-0 success away at Tokyo Verde, it has to be said, with a goal in each half from Vinicius Araujo. Two very similar poacher's goals, really. Very early on, the Verde goalkeeper Mateus could only parry a header from a corner, and Vinicius was on hand to tap in the loose ball. Midway through the second half, Shuto Minami, a former Verde youth team, of course, had a shot blocked by Mateus in goal, but the ball ran loose, and once again, it was Vinicius who reacted quickest and tucked away the chance. So surely the easiest brace of his career, Yamagata picking up a very Very handy 2-0 win away at Tokyo Verde. Last and probably least for this round was the Ehime game against Jeff Chiba. Stu, this one finished 1-1. Jeff taking an early lead through Daisuke Suzuki's header from a swirling right wing cross from Shuto Kojima. But on around about the half hour, Takumu Kawamura was given a bit too much time and space on the edge of the box, and he sent a low drive into the back of the Jeff net. So Ehime steadying the ship ever so slightly after being beaten 3-0 at Verde on the opening day. Yeah, that game finishing Ehime 1, Jeff Chiba 1. From those games, Stu, Kanazawa winning at Okayama, Yamagata winning at Verde, Sagamihara and Gunma 0-0, Ehime and Jeff 1-1. Was there anything you noticed or you wanted to mention?
I like Montedio Yamagata. I think they're a good side. I think they'll be in a year this year where, again, there's no kind of standout sides in J2. I think that Montedio Yamagata won't be too far away from the promotion discussion. Certainly, as we head towards the mid-season, I think Araujo is just such a good player at this level. And he gets into those kind of like goal scorer positions, but now they've got players that work really well either side of him. They've got Nakahara, who came from Kumamoto last year, Shuto Minami as well. The base, the midfield is really good. We talked about like Kitakyushu losing players, like Shintaro Kokubu is a really, really good holding midfielder. Yuta Kumamoto at the back is really good. They've got a strong spine, and I think that goes a long way in this league. I quite like the look of Montedio Yamagata this year. I think for the others, like Ehime, that's a good point, but I think really this year they need to be winning against Jeff United at home. I think that represents a good chance for them to take 3 points. There are, on paper at least, there are those kind of games a few and far between when you think, okay, Ehime have a good chance to win this game. I think, yeah, I don't know about Jeff. Some things never change. Like, they've opened up against Corfu, who are better than them, and took a point, albeit having a last-minute penalty saved against them. And then they should be beating Ehime, you'd think, but they can't. And yeah, it's just, hopefully it's not, but it just seems like another year of the same old at Jeff. Kanazawa, I think that's a good result for them, actually. Important to get their first win at the season. I think this year, with the four relegation spots, like, you can't really have that downtime, especially at the start of the year, because you'll just leave yourself behind the eight ball so badly, which is why Sagamihara and Gunma might look at their game and think, shit, we should have won that game. We need to win these kind of games. Maybe in the next kind of 3 or 4 weeks, it wouldn't surprise me, just even so early on in the season, for a team to start looking a bit stranded, because, yeah, some of these teams just really need to get they really need to get off the mark, and some teams have got better chances of that than others. I think Matsumoto won't take too long to click. They just got to stop playing so many midfielders. I mean, they bought about 20 midfielders in January, and yeah, then he played Sakano up front, I think. But they'll click, I think, sooner rather than later. But Sagamihara will find it difficult going. I think Tochigi will find it difficult going. I think Ehime, maybe even Jeff, might find it difficult going. And both, I think Okayama and Kanazawa will also find it difficult going for the first kind of 5 or 6 weeks. So I think it'll be interesting to see if one or two teams get kind of slightly cut adrift early on and see how they react to that.
That's a good point. Yeah, just based on our conversation in this pod, Stu, I do think there are some similarities between Sagamihara, Okayama and Tochigi, and the point I'm alluding to is I think all three of these teams are going to find it hard to score goals this year. This is just based on what I've seen. So I think for Okayama, it's so important to get Leon Jai back fit quickly you know, to help them out up front. I think, yeah, goals are going to be at a premium for all three of these teams, and that could be important, you know, further down the line in the season. But yeah, thanks for your analysis and your insight, Stu. It's been great to have you back on the pod, waxing lyrical. Before I let you go, I just want to take a quick look at the round three games coming up this weekend. So we'll do a very, very brief preview. Again, there's a kind of balance of games on Saturday, March 13th, Sunday, March 14th. On Saturday, we have Omiya hosting Kyoto, Iwata against Mito, Yamaguchi taking on Niigata, and Nagasaki hosting Ehime. Which of those four sounds the most appealing? Stu, I like the look of Iwata versus Mito. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think there'll definitely be goals in that game, because there's a couple of clown shows at the back for both teams. I think I'll be interested in Yamaguchi and Niigata. See if Niigata kind of, you know, if they look the real deal. I think Yamaguchi, like you mentioned earlier, they're probably better than kind of what they've shown so far this year. Going forward, obviously they've got Kusano, they've got Kazuma Takai, Kikami George, and players of that ilk. I think they'll provide a pretty good test for Niigata. Obviously they'll be without Shion Honma, to see how their creative spark goes. But I think Yamaguchi versus Niigata will be a decent game to gauge as well, I would say.
Yeah, agreed. I think Niigata will probably fancy their chances of making it three wins in a row, won't they? But the J-League is rarely that simple. Okay, on the Sunday games, Stu, I think we're seven fixtures to just cast a quick eye over. Gunma taking on Ryukyu, Jeff Chiba hosting Akita, another edition of the Tokyo Classic, Machida Zelvia against Tokyo Verdy, Kofu take on Tochigi. The game that I think looks good is Matsumoto hosting Yamagata. We also have Kanazawa taking on Kitakyushu, and Okayama against Sagamihara. If you had to pick one, Stu, which one would you recommend for the listeners? I think Matsumoto against Yamagata. It's very difficult for me not to say Matsumoto Yamaga there. So I'm doing my best, but Matsumoto versus Yamagata is the game that I would choose if I was allowed. What about you?
I think I might choose Machida and Tokyo Verdy, because I think kind of rather like Niigata, I think I want a little bit more evidence about to back up my hunch about Machida being good this year, and I think this will be a decent test for them. I think probably on paper they're a better side than Tokyo Verdy, but I want to see it in action just so that kind of my eyes are not deceiving me. I think Matsumoto versus Yamagata will be a good game, and I think, yeah, those two games, you know, Machida and Verdy, Matsumoto and Yamagata, will be good. I think Ryukyu probably have a decent chance of making it 3 from 3, and I think I don't want to go around spreading rumors, but I would say that if Akita beat Chiba at the weekend, I would dare say that Yun Junhwan might already be in a bit of strife coming in if they lose that game. If they win, I think everything's fine and rosy, but I think if Akita go to Chiba and beat them, then I think there might be some problems brewing.
Good job that Jeff don't have a record of having disappointing results at home to newly promoted or struggling provincial teams, isn't it? Yeah. I think you could probably make the same case for Iwata against Mito, couldn't you? I think Masakazu Suzuki's under some pressure already in the hot seat at Iwata. So if they lose at home to Mito, you know, that'd be three straight defeats to start the season. He might find the hot seat uncomfortably warm after a result like that. Yeah, on the Tokyo Classic, Machida against Tokyo Verdy, very quickly, I think you're right to pick out that game as being an interesting one. It could be a long afternoon for Tokyo Verdy, I feel, and that's based on the fact that when I look at Machida's side, I think their weak point, if they have one, is at centre-back, because, you know, Mizumoto and Fukatsu are both elder statesmen. They're not the most mobile centre-back pairing. However, if you look at Verdi's team, where are Verdy weak? Well, Verdy are weak up front. To be honest, I probably could have rolled them into that group with Okayama, Tochigi and Sagamihara, of teams that are going to find it hard to score goals this year. So I think, bearing in mind that Machida's, where I have a question mark about Machida, is at centre-back, and it's exactly the kind of the matching place in Verdi's team up front, where I think they're weak. I think Machida will probably have too much for Tokyo Verdy in that game. But yeah, again, the J-League sometimes, well, not sometimes, almost every weekend throws up these surprises for us, doesn't it? So I'm sure, I apologise in advance if I've jinxed it for any Machida supporters now. But yeah, I think that could be an interesting one. I think Verdy are very light up front, and I think Machida away is going to be a good litmus test for that, as you alluded to.
Did you know that Vanfori Corfu Stadium has been renamed?
Yes, but I can't remember. Is it called JIT or something? JIZ? Not JIZ. It can't be JIZ. That'd be unfortunate.
Got it up on the J League website. JIT Recycle Stadium.
Recycle Stadium. That's good. Yeah. I think it might have been one of these funny ones where I bet the naming rights contract probably started on like March the 1st.
Yes.
So I bet in all of your kind of Meikans and literature, it probably still got the, suppose it's Chugin Stadium, but something like that from March the 1st is probably changed. And on stadiums, and I promise I'll let you go to bed now, Stu. But on stadiums, I think Sean Carroll made a good point last week. I wanted to reiterate: is Tochigi playing more games at that new Kanseki Stadium this year?
Mm.
Rather than the Green Stadium, sort of makes sense on the one hand, but could be counterproductive on the other, if it unsettles them. And, you know, they're playing in a kind of massive, three quarters empty concrete bowl. Yeah, instead of what felt like a proper, in inverted commas, football stadium at Tochigi Green Stadium, didn't it? So, yeah, we wait to see. We've been wrong before. We'll be wrong again. But, it's definitely something to keep an eye on, I think. Okay, Stu, I think I've kept you for long enough, so thanks for your analysis and your insight. It's been really good having you back on the pod, and I'm sure the listeners will enjoy hearing your voice instead of mine for a change. Before we finish, we'll just as usual say a big thanks to all the listeners, people who download the pod, support us, retweet us or come at us with questions. And if you're a patron and support us with dollars and cents as well, we obviously really appreciate that, and we do our best to make sure the product is worthy of your support. So thanks for that. Okay, we'll leave it there for this week, Stu. Hope everybody enjoys the football over the weekend, and we'll be back again next week to talk about the round three action. But enjoy the weekend, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
'Hello everyone, hopefully you're still listening. John Steele here with a very quick public service announcement. You'll already know about this if you listen to part 2 of the J3 season preview pod, but just in case you haven't, Mike Innes at Gogo Omia Ardija is coming on board the pod on a more permanent basis for this season. He's going to be in charge of the J3 coverage on the pod going forward. To that end, he's going to be the host of a mini pod each week called J-Talk Short Corner, and he's here himself to tell you more about it. So the next voice you'll hear will be Mike's, and hope you enjoy what he's got to say, and I hope you enjoy his contributions to the pod throughout the season. But here comes Mike Innes with the inaugural episode of J-Talk Short Corner.
J-Talk Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, a new pod that aims to keep you up to date with J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this solo episode, I'll be previewing matches in the opening round of the new J3 season. Before I get started with the main business, I thought it would help listeners who are less familiar with J3 to have a very quick primer on the division for 2021. There are 15 teams in J3 this year, so each round of fixtures comprises 7 matches plus one team gets a bye. There'll be 28 games for each team, 2 will be promoted, J2 licence permitting, and there's no relegation from J3 to the JFL as the top tier of the Japanese non-league system. As John Steele and I discussed in our season preview pods on J-Talk Extra Time, you could make a credible case for half the clubs in the division finishing up in the promotion places. Ex-J2 teams like Katare Toyama, FC Gifu, Gainare Tottori, Kagoshima United and Roasso Kumamoto, plus AC Nagano Parseiro and FC Imabari, both aiming to reach J2 for the first time. This means J3 watchers are expecting a season of close and exciting competition with big games in every round. It's not only about promotion though. J3 is the place where we can see J-League expansion in real time. Small clubs growing into professionalism, establishing themselves as local representatives on a national stage. For teams like Fukushima United, Vanrare Hachinohe and Iwate Gruja Morioka, progress in 2021 will look like a halfway finish. Tegevajaro Miyazaki, who finished second in the JFL last season, are the latest club to join this group and to provide J-League football in their city. But now, on to those matches in the opening round, with fixtures all scheduled for Sunday the 14th of March. It seems only right to start with the team many have predicted to take the J3 title this year and who only just lost out on promotion in 2020. That's AC Nagano Parseiro, who begin away at Kamatamari Sanuki. Nagano have stuck with the same coach as last year, Yuji Yokoyama, who's got experience of winning promotion from J3 with Tochigi. And they'll be looking to introduce their big signing, Hidetaka Kanazono, the veteran striker from Vanfore Corfu. After again failing to go up, Nagano are under pressure to make amends, and this is a winnable-looking game to get them started. Sanuki had another tough year in 2020, but the slate is wiped clean, and there's definitely a chance to cause a surprise if they can get a less-than-resilient Nagano on the back foot. A pair of teams aiming for J2 meet at Shiranami Stadium, home of Kagoshima United, where Gainari Tottori are the visitors. To help their push for promotion, Kagoshima have taken the innovative step of appointing as coach Arthur Pappas, previously assistant to Ange Postecoglou at Yokohama F. Marinos. The big question for this game is, against a tough opponent, how quickly has Pappas been able to instill his ideas in the Kagoshima squad? Tottori are taking a very different approach to the task of promotion. Riki Takagi starts his third year in charge and he's making incremental improvements. Unfortunately for him, he goes into the season without two key signings. Daichi Akiyama on loan from Cerezo is expected to be out until mid-May, Yushi Nagashima from Gifu until early June. For Tottori though, this is an early chance to get one over on a Kagoshima who are looking to make an impact but may not start too smoothly. FC Gifu are another team being tipped to make a return to J2. In our preview pods, John Steele was raising questions about Gifu's choice of coach to guide them through the season in Takayoshi Anma. There's not much in his record to suggest he can navigate a route to promotion. 28 game seasons don't allow room for slip-ups and, like Nagano, the pressure's quickly on because their first game is one they'll be expected to win at home to one of the smaller clubs in the division, Vanrare Hachinohe. The game between FC Imabari and Roasso Kumamoto is a good example of how quickly football can change. This was Imabari's first home game in 2020 as well, and in July, when the game was eventually played, Imabari were the new boys looking to establish themselves, while Kumamoto were perhaps the biggest club in the division. Now, Imabari are an outside bet for a top two finish, while for Kumamoto, a collapse in form halfway through 2020, coupled with a torrid close season, means they look set for a year of struggle. If that wasn't bad enough, Kumamoto go into the game without last season's main striker, Toshiki Takahashi, as he recovers from injury. So on Sunday, it's Kumamoto who will aim to spring a surprise. The other opening round fixtures see Katare Toyama, who finished a disappointing ninth last year, but looked capable of improvement under the experienced Nobuhiro Ishizaki, go to YSCC Yokohama. That one last year finished YSCC 3, Toyama 4, and we may see some goals again this time, especially via Toyama's exciting new signings Tsubasa Yoshihira and former YSCC winger Shoma Otoizumi. Goals are also a possibility at Fukushima United against Fujieda My FC, where the home side have retained from last season Nigerian top scorer Ismaila and his Turkish-German foil Tokac. Fujieda, for their part, have added Takayuki Miyamoto from YSCC to a forward line that already boasts Tsugatoshi Oishi and the veteran Yasuhito Morishima. Between them, those three scored 33 times last season. Last, but definitely not least, and at the club's brand new Unilever Stadium, Tegevajaro Miyazaki play their first ever J3 game at home to Iwate Gurugia Morioka. Expectations are not so high that Miyazaki will make as much of an impact as Imabari did in their first J3 season, but there's a good test for them in Iwate, a smaller team but showing signs of development under their coach Yutaka Akita. The team that this week have a bye are Azul Claro Numazu, who have to wait until Saturday the 20th for their season to start. With all the round one matches covered then, that's it for this mini-pod. And all that remains for me to add is, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.